is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hi, this is Don Showalter from USA Basketball, and you are listening to the Hoop Heads Podcast.
Hey, Hoop Heads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoop Heads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoop Heads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today. Hello and welcome to the Hoop Heads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight, Jason, once again, it is 1:08 a.m. on Sunday night after watching The Last Dance, episodes 5 and 6. Thoughts?
I thought they were good. I thought, you know, we talked a little bit before and not much, but I felt like there wasn't like any big overarching things that kind of came out. Like, you know, I thought they were going to explore the Kukoc stuff a little bit more, and I don't feel like they did. Maybe they will come back to it, but, you know, that was kind of interesting. And then obviously the whole Dream Team situation. I did laugh at the someone, I don't remember, I think it was Magic, when they were talking trash in the game, and Magic was talking about, oh, you better start being Air Jordan or you're not going to, and then Jordan just took over.
Don't poke the bear, man.
He's like, what did I just do? So I think, you know, that was interesting. I enjoyed, you know, they kind of touched on the Isaiah Thomas stuff a little bit. I enjoyed that. And they definitely touched on, you know, his gambling situation, which I think definitely this whole week set up is for more for the, I think the next week, the focus is going to be when he took time away. I think that's going to be a little bit of the focus next week, at least would be my assumption, right? Would that be your assumption?
Yeah, I got to believe that that's going to be the flashback. A lot of the flashback is going to focus on his decision to leave, then the time that he spent playing baseball, and then obviously the decision to come back. I think that's where you're going to see most of the flashbacks in episodes 7 and 8 would be my guess.
Yeah, definitely. So, well, it'll be interesting to see what it's going to look like. And but I thought the other thing, that there was something else that really stuck out to me. You know, I found it funny that Larry Bird was his coach in the 1998 All-Star game. I kind of didn't realize that.
That was one of my favorite moments in the whole
all three of them are together.
With him, Magic, and Bird, and they're all just kind of talking junk, and Jordan walks away. Magic's like, I used to give it to both y'all, and Jordan just kind of is like, you know, as they're walking back into the locker room.
Yeah.
But again, it's kind of amazing just to see those three guys together. Or even there was the moment where Magic was talking about when he was doing the game for NBC against Portland, and talking about how he was up playing cards with Jordan all night. And that's when Jordan talked about Drexler and how he was pissed off that people related him to, were trying to compare him to Drexler. And Magic was like, oh boy, you know, I don't know if I'd want to be Clyde tomorrow. Michael's going to really give it to him. And just the fact that you forget like what a closed fraternity that the whole thing really is, in terms of these guys knowing each other and the friendships and rivalries and all that stuff. But it was really cool to see Bird, Magic, and Jordan all in that same locker room scene together.
How about busting each other's chops? How about the fact that he started next to Sean Kemp and Rick Smits was there? I kind of forgot Rick Smits even existed until I saw him in the episode tonight.
Yeah, Sean Kemp rocking the powder blue 1992 electric blue Cavs uniform.
Yeah, I will say, you know, I know that, I don't know what Kobe's whole, I mean, I know they kind of, I felt like they kind of shoehorned him in tonight. I feel bad saying that, but I don't feel like Kobe really added anything to the episode. I don't know if you feel the same way, but
yeah,
you know,
it was kind of like,
I think it was more of a striking thing, like, oh, because now he's not here, you know, maybe it was more, make more of an impact than, I don't know. I don't know. I just didn't feel, I feel like he was shoehorned in tonight.
Well, there was a little bit. I mean, I think you bring him in for the, obviously for the comparisons and the fact that he idolized Jordan and clearly emulated a lot of the things that Jordan tried to do, both from a physical standpoint and fundamental standpoint, and just the things that Kobe tried to do out on the floor, but also from his mindset and mentality. And as he said in the episode, how he talked about none of this would have happened without Jordan's influence. And you kind of saw that. We got a glimpse of that during Kobe's ceremony at the Staples Center after he passed away, and Jordan's speech. And just, I don't think people had an understanding of what the depth of that relationship was like. But that was his final, what in theoretically, barring the Wizards' comeback, would have been his final, or could have been at that point, his final All-Star game in Madison Square Garden. And there was sort of a big brother, little brother type thing where Kobe was kind of coming after the old guard, kind of like what Jordan had done when he felt like Isaiah and Magic had froze him out back in the 1985 All-Star game in his rookie year. And so there was kind of that whole parallel. But in terms of the storyline and the arc of the episode, I think I agree with you. I don't know that that necessarily fit there. And to be honest with you, I'm not sure where it fits in the entire story. But obviously, since that's really the only time on a big stage, the All-Star game, where those two guys interacted, there really wasn't anywhere else to put it. And I think with, had Kobe not passed away, I'm not sure. I'd be curious to know if that had anything to do with where they put this in and how much of the Kobe stuff they put in here, whether or not some of that would have been left on the cutting room floor if he was still alive, just because I don't think it fit. As you said, I'm not sure it fit into the episode. It was interesting, and it was certainly something that you'd want to see if you're a fan of either one of those two guys, but I'm not sure it just fit with the storyline of tonight's two episodes.
Yeah, and like, you know, I'm okay with it, but like the other thing too is like, why... I'm a fan of his music, but why is Justin Timberlake even making an appearance in this episode?
Yeah, like, that was weird, just to say that he had to run out and buy his Jordans. That was strange.
I feel like that's kind of like shoehorning things in that don't necessarily... I'm, like I said, I don't want to... I'm not trying to take away from the, you know, the whole thing, but I just
Justin Timberlake could have been anybody.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
It could have been. Right? It could have been any celebrity. It could have been me saying, "Hey, I really wanted to run out and get the shoes when they first came out." Yeah, No kidding. So did everybody else. So
yeah.
That didn't necessarily jibe with, again, the way that it's been done over the course of the series of episodes. Both of those things seemed like they were sort of tangential to the actual storyline. The shoe piece of it was really interesting.
Yeah. I agree with that.
What I found to be the most interesting, and a lot of that stuff I knew. What I enjoyed the most about that was the homemade banner in the Nike headquarters saying "Welcome Jordan family," and the picture of Michael and his mom and dad standing in front of that homemade banner in Nike's offices. That just cracked me up, because you think about what courting a player, I'm sure, looks like today versus what that looked like. And I knew he was an Adidas guy kind of coming in. I mean, I had remembered that story, but it was funny to hear him talk about that. And then I had never heard the story that his mom said, "Hey, son, go get on the plane and at least have a meeting with Nike." And obviously the rest is history from there, and just the shoes and the colors and the fact that he wasn't allowed to play with them. And then we think about the way shoes are today and the multiple colors and guys on teams all wearing different shoes and everything. But that was something totally unique and different to basketball and to shoes at the time.
And here I was, I didn't know he was an Adidas guy. And when I heard him say that, I almost fell off my sofa. It's like, who's wearing Adidas? Come on now, Jordan.
Well,
I don't know.
Well, the only guy that wore Adidas back in the 80s, I mean, you saw the commercial, right?
Yeah.
The Converse commercial. You've seen that before, right? Or was that something you had never seen before?
That was something I hadn't seen before.
Did you go back and look at it on YouTube and see the whole thing?
No, I'm going to have to do that.
Yeah, you're going to have to do that. It's worth it. It's hilarious. The last line from Bird, "I walked away with the MVP," that's the best line.
Was he trying to be like, I don't know. He sounded like he was trying to talk like he was
It was bad.
Like or something. I don't know.
I don't know. It was bad. It was not a good look for Larry Bird. That was a humorous commercial. That was a funny commercial
when it came
at
out.
The time. Yeah, I mean, it was funny at the time. Like, people made fun of it, and I remember imitating the voices and the different guys' raps and all that stuff. But I mean, it's aged. It's even funnier when you age it to today. And yeah, it's worth going down and checking it out on YouTube because it's pretty funny. But you look at that lineup of guys who were wearing Converse at the time. So you had Bird, Magic, Isaiah, Bernard King. I think who else was in there? It's Mark Aguirre, I know, was in there. But there was all the big names were wearing Dr. J. We're all wearing Converse at the time, and Jordan was really the first guy that switched over to Nike. I know personally when I was a kid, I think I've said it before, but Dr. J was my guy, and he had the Converse All-Stars. Those were the shoes that I wanted. That was my first pair of real basketball shoes. And I didn't switch to Nike until Jordan. Jordan's what made me switch my allegiances from Converse to Nike. And then I had the original pair, the one that he wore in his final game in the Garden that turned his feet all bloody. I had a pair of those. And then
I didn't know that story either. I didn't know that one.
I knew he had worn the shoes in his last game at the Garden, but I didn't realize that he had bloody feet as a result of that.
It was like the original bloody sock game, man.
That's right. That's right.
But yeah, I thought there were some really interesting things in the episode, but I don't really necessarily know that anything, you know, did anything really like completely surprise me. When the biggest thing that surprised me was that Larry Bird coached him in the All-Star game, because I didn't obviously remember that. You know, that was kind of the biggest thing that I took away. And I know that's probably silly to say, but I don't know. That was just my thought.
Well, there was one other odd cameo that we forgot.
Who was that?
Seinfeld.
Oh, yeah, Seinfeld. What, Seinfeld got a solid 2 minutes there.
He did. He got some good run in there. He did have a good line, and I think I had heard about it in the preview where he taps on the chalkboard. Yeah, I'd take that out of there. That's not going to work. That was pretty good. But otherwise, it seemed like the conversation with Jordan. It'd be curious. There was no backstory to that or context placed to it, whether or not him and Jordan had any kind of relationship or that was some kind of celebrity meet and greet with Jordan or with Seinfeld. I have no idea.
Yeah. Bizarre.
Yeah, it was very, very strange from that standpoint.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anything else, you know.
What stood out to me was I read a tweet too about it, but as you're watching the episode, what stood out to me was the number of times that he's just smoking a cigar.
Yeah, man. Listen, as he said in the episode, when I started in the league, people were drinking half a case of beer and smoking cigarettes at halftime.
Which is true, but I thought it was hilarious, though, that, I mean, so much time off the court, whether he was on the golf course or laying there in his hotel room or after the game, he's smoking a cigar. Somebody, I don't even know who it was, but I saw a tweet that said something like, here's Jordan dominating the NBA, where basically he was spending all his time off the court drinking beer, smoking cigars.
And gambling.
And gambling and playing golf. That's pretty much what he was doing when he wasn't playing.
That's pretty funny.
I mean, I remember him smoking the cigars like in the locker room after championship games and seeing that on TV. But I don't remember any of that coming out where he was constantly basically carrying that cigar around the whole time. I found that to be kind of interesting just because I didn't realize the extent to which he was smoking those cigars.
Yeah. I wouldn't have known it either. So it was definitely interesting. And, you know, like you said, you think about how NBA players take care of their bodies. Now we know that players smoke cigars every once in a while and things like that. And obviously, you know, there's definitely, it's funny, Mike, I saw something that the NBA has the strictest weed policy now of all the major sports. And when you think about that, like a few years ago, you never heard about an NBA player getting busted for weed, right? Have you?
Right.
Like, and I'm not trying to like, I feel like there's a lot of them that probably do it in their, you know, off time. But for whatever reason, now the NBA has the strictest weed laws. But like, my thought is, you know, all these players nowadays are like on diets and things. What would have Jordan been like if he would have had to be on a diet? And the other thing I thought about, Mike, is, you know, Jordan, the diet piece. But the other thing I thought about is, you know, he talked a lot about the pressure of people getting on him about gambling. What would have he been like if he would have had to have social media around? Like, and because like when he was playing and all this stuff was going on, he didn't like all the press getting in his business then. What would have it been like if it was nowadays? That's the one thing I think it would be real rough on him, huh?
Well, I think there's two ways you can look at that. One is you still, even without social media, you just look at the crush of reporters and everything that he had to deal with all the time. And you got to see it again a little bit tonight, just the glimpses of when he's in his hotel room by himself, when he's playing the quarters against the wall game with the security guys, that here's a guy who's just completely, completely and totally isolated from everything because he just can't go anywhere in public. And yeah, you got to think that social media would have turned up the screws a little bit on that, but I'm not sure that it makes that much difference, because I think it's the face-to-face interactions that get tiresome, because social media, you can turn that off. And for a lot of people, that's difficult to do. But for a guy who's in that type of position, I got to believe that if you wanted to turn it off and not see it and not react to it, that you could have the choice to do that. He didn't have the choice to get locked in his hotel room and to be surrounded everywhere he went. Like you saw it, I told that story last week about people surrounding his car while he was in the gym. You kind of got to see that a couple times tonight where people are just standing, like anywhere they think he's going to be, people are just waiting for him to show up and they don't know when or if he's going to be there. And they're standing in parking garages and they're waiting outside for the bus and they're in the United Center parking lot and all these different places where they think he's going to show up and he's not even there. And you can see where that would wear on you, that would beat on you. And he obviously is a different type of personality and just an unbelievable athlete, which goes back to kind of what you said and what you asked about what would he have been like with today's training and diets and nutrition and all that stuff. And there was the one scene where I think he was lacing up his shoes or tying his shoes. Might have been before that Knicks game where he was putting on the his old shoes.
Yeah.
And he had his shirt off and he was tying his shoes. And it was just, I mean, the six pack, he was just ripped. You could see like his shoulders and the definition. It's kind of like what I talked about when I saw him in person. He was basically like a walking muscle that somebody had wrapped skin around. And that was in his last year there where he's whatever he was at the time, 35 years old. And here he was again, smoking cigars, playing golf, obviously drinking beer sometimes, just some of the things that he was doing compared to what a player might be doing today in terms of those things. And yet he was just such a special athlete. And even the gambling thing and being out all night or the playing, they didn't address the supposedly playing like 36 holes with Barkley at some point during that 93 finals.
Well, I mean, I would have, I think if you would have played Barkley and golf in the middle of the finals, you would have just seen his golf swing. You would have laughed so hard that you would have been like, I can't lose to this guy. I can't lose basketball to this guy.
That could be very true. But I think the point there is that this guy's like a vampire, basically. I mean, I don't think he slept very much. I don't think he needed sleep. He was just ultra competitive. He was just an unbelievable athlete. And he could do some of those things that a normal, ordinary human being just wouldn't be able to do and still function at the top of their profession. And he just was, it's what made him different. It's what made him who he was, is that he was able to do all those things. And I remember what a big deal it was, the trip to Atlantic City, you know, in between games one and two of that Knicks series, and just how people were flabbergasted that this guy would go and do that in between games. And it kind of dented his, I don't know about reputation, but people had always thought of him as being so focused on winning, that winning was so important. It was sort of the first glimpse into this guy just goes about it in a different way than normal human beings do. And he took a lot of flack. You could see it in the episode, and he took a lot of flack in real time. I remember it, just people talking about, what's he doing? Why is this guy doing this? He's letting his teammates down, especially when they lose that game and go down 2-0. And then, of course, Michael Jordan becomes Michael Jordan and just destroys the Knicks over the next four games. I mean, that's just, that's what makes him the greatest of all time, is the fact that when he's needed, he can conjure up the types of performances that you saw throughout that episode tonight. Anytime he was questioned, anytime he was challenged, he just rose to the occasion every single time and got it done. And that's what made him great then, and what's what makes him the greatest ever now.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So on that speak of greatest of all time, and I'm completely in your camp, but I saw someone that I follow on Twitter, Jacob L. Rosen. He's a guy I've followed for a long, long time. He posted some interesting stats. So I'm going to go through these really quickly. I'm not going to spend too long of a time, but he goes over four of the highest amount of playoff games and their records. So I've got Jordan, Duncan, Shaquille, and LeBron. All right. So here you go. Jordan played 179 playoff games over 37 series and 13 playoffs. His first round record, 31-15. The conference semis, 35-18. Conference finals, 29-16. And the finals, 24-11. That's a pretty good finals record there, Mike. 24-11, right?
It's pretty solid. Yep.
Okay. Okay. Duncan. He played 251 playoff games. So he played almost 80 more playoff games than Michael Jordan. And I know that they don't do five-game series anymore and they're seven games. So that has something to do with it. Okay, I completely buy into that. But so Duncan played 80 more playoff games. His first round record, 62-28. Okay. Conference semis, 45-37. Conference finals, 27-18. His finals record, 23-11, Mike. He's got one less victory than Jordan. Jordan, obviously, 24-11. Duncan, 23-11. I found that interesting because I would have never thought that. Okay. Shaq, you know, he played 216 playoff games. 45-23 first round, 40-26, 27-25, 17-13. And then there's LeBron, 239 playoff games. So he's still 12 playoff games behind Duncan, which I guess makes sense. But his first round record, 52-10, Mike. I know that's the East of the current East, you know, or the East of his era, but 52-10 in the first round is pretty disgusting, quite frankly.
That's more games in the first round against bad opponents.
Playing
seven games. So that factors in, but for sure, LeBron's taking care of business against bad teams. Yeah, no question about that.
48-21, 38-21, and then 18-31 in the finals. We already know that. Can you guess what team LeBron has played the most games against in the finals? Or in the, not in the finals, in the playoffs?
Not including the finals?
Oh, it doesn't matter. The finals
doesn't matter. I would say Boston.
Yeah, Boston. He's 25-16 against Boston. Indiana's number two. 20-10.
That makes sense. Yeah, it makes sense because they, you know, the Heat played them again a bunch of times in the playoffs during his Heat run. He played them a couple times with the Cavs.
But yeah, I mean, just some interesting things I saw. I saw it and I was like, I had to bookmark that to mention those. I thought they were interesting. So
I think the debate, the greatest of all time debate, comes down to how much you value the longevity of whoever you want to say, Bill Russell, LeBron, Kareem, how much do you value Duncan? How much do you value the longevity of those guys versus just the greatness of Jordan? And not that Jordan had a short career, because he certainly didn't. He was at the pinnacle for a long, long time, but he has a season and a half that he's gone in the middle of what for most of these other guys was their prime years of winning. And then he steps away again, which we're going to see over the next four episodes. And clearly he still could have come back and continue to compete and try to win more championships. Now you see just the pressure that he was under, both at the time when you see him in 93 after he beats the Suns, and next week I assume we'll get into him walking away like we talked about earlier. And then he walks away a second time, both times where clearly the first time he's clearly the best player in the league. It's not even close. And then in 98, he's clearly still the best player, but probably getting close to having that reign start to come to an end from a physical standpoint. But had he continued to play that following season, whether he returned to Chicago or whether he went and played somewhere else, there's no doubt that the opportunity for him to win more titles was present based on his physical capabilities. And same thing, I don't think you can go back and retrospectively say, well, if he doesn't retire, they win eight in a row, because you saw the pressure and the frustration and all the things that were weighing on him at that time. And I think if he comes back at some point, I don't know that they can go through and win all eight of those titles. Maybe I'm wrong, but it just seemed like
that break re-energized
him and allowed him to win six. I mean, maybe they win four in a row. Maybe they win five in a row. Maybe they even win six in a row. I don't think they win eight in a row, even if he stays, because I just think they get worn down. They wear out each other's welcome. They get on each other's nerves. I just don't know that they can pull it through.
Yeah, I think the other thing to think about, too, is if he doesn't retire in 98, can they win another championship? Like, there's so many outstanding, we could sit here and argue, Jordan could have easily won 10 championships in a row if things had broken the right way. I mean, that, if we go back to 89 and 90, the Celtics series or Detroit series, they could have gone the other way. And
right. Scotty doesn't get the migraine.
I think they beat the Lakers that year, and then they could have, I think there's lots of what ifs, into that.
No question.
So
no question about that.
Anything else that stands out in your?
I thought the Horace Grant Jordan rule stuff, that clearly Jordan believes that Horace Grant was the guy leaking the information out to Sam Smith for that book. I thought that was, everybody else kind of hedged, and Jordan was like, it was Horace.
Horace, like, it wasn't me.
Which is funny. You wonder, I have no idea what the relationship is like with Jordan and Horace Grant at this point. But yeah, it was interesting that Jordan was like, it was Horace.
Well, and then
everybody else they talked to kind of backtracked on it, or at least didn't corroborate that, hey, it was totally.
Speaking of that, how about the when they were at the center circle and they're like, you guys know each other? And Michael's like, yeah, he used to be going to the playoffs, but not probably this year or something like that. I thought that was a pretty funny one. That was good.
I mean, you got to see some of the stuff that was talked about heading into the documentary, just of him getting on guys and trash talking. You saw it with the Bird Magic part at the beginning. You saw it during the Olympics, him talking junk. But again, there's nothing that I've seen to this point that paints him as this ruthless jerk that nobody would want to play with. I just don't see it. To me, everything that I've seen so far are things that you see all the time on a basketball court. If you've gone and played pickup basketball anywhere with anyone, you've heard some of those same exact kinds of things.
Oh, I've never trash talked. Mike, what are you talking about?
I mean, it's just commonplace. It's not unusual. It's not anything. Like, they even had the one quote from, I think it was from the Jordan rules, that basically said Jordan told certain teammates not to give other people the ball or they'd never get the ball from him. Well, duh. Yeah. I mean, there's some guys that he trusted and some guys that he didn't. And he didn't want the ball going to guys he didn't trust. And if you're the best player on your team, then those are the kinds of things that you do. Those are the kinds of things that you say. Those are the things that are not unusual or specific to Michael Jordan. Those are things that happen all the time in locker rooms and out on the basketball court. And there's really nothing, like I said, there's been nothing in here that has surprised me in terms of a guy who's as competitive as him, who wanted to try to get every advantage he possibly could. There's been nothing that stood out to me as being out of the ordinary of what I would have expected to see.
Hey, the other thing that I didn't realize, Mike, and once again, this shows how young I am. I didn't realize that Paxson hit the shot to win the Phoenix series. That never dawned on me that he was the guy that hit the game-winning shot that series.
Well, if you go back and watch it, Jordan makes the pass to Horace Grant, kind of down on the, he's on the left baseline.
Yeah, yeah.
And Horace has a pretty I mean, Horace could have taken that shot, and that would have tied it. I think they were down.
They were down two. Yeah,
I think they were down two. So Horace had that little baseline.
So what you're saying is Horace Grant invented the passing from underneath the basket to shoot a three-pointer.
Possibly. I mean, obviously it ended up being a great decision, and Paxton knocks in the shot. But Horace had a shot down there. I've heard people say, oh, Horace backed out of the, you know, didn't want the shot and kind of just panic passed it out to Paxton. But Paxton's wide open right there. And he clearly proved over the course of that run that he was a guy that you could count on. I'm sure if you talked, and they really haven't, Jordan hasn't talked a whole lot about Paxton in this documentary yet. Maybe he will, maybe he won't, because it seems like Paxton's best moments now are behind him, and he's not going to be a part of the next three-peat. So, but clearly Paxton was a guy that Jordan trusted. So the fact that he ended up taking that shot, and we talked about his 91 finals, fourth quarter in the clinching game where he went 5 for 5, clearly he was a guy that Jordan believed in and trusted as a teammate, and I'm sure he was happy when Paxton was the guy out there banging that shot home, beat Phoenix.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, I have a lot of respect for Barkley, because I thought he came off pretty good in this episode too, in the sense that he was very gracious. He didn't seem like he was being a clown, as far as, like, you know, he said something like, you know,
he has a lot of respect for Jordan, and I think most of the guys from that era, I think, have respect for Jordan just because of the competitor that he was. And I think anybody who played with him on that dream team, everybody went into that, like we talked about last week, and you saw it in this episode, that everybody went in thinking that it was going to be Magic's team. And then as that scrimmage kind of laid out, and then the aftermath where Ahmad Rashad's at the hotel bar and Jordan walks by and, hey, Michael, who'd get the last shot? He's like, me. And just like staring at Ahmad like, are you crazy? Like, it's not even up for debate. And so I think that there just was that, in that era, there was that respect that guys had for Jordan because they had seen what he could do and they had seen what he had done to them. And I think that this documentary points that out clearly. There was a lot of distaste for Draymond Green on Twitter. I don't know if you were able to see any of that after the episode ended.
Oh, because Draymond cried and went and called Kevin Durant?
No, because Draymond has been saying that he was better than Barkley.
Oh yeah. Well,
there was a lot of people saying, yeah, I don't think Draymond ever could have gone toe to toe with peak Michael Jordan the way Barkley went toe to toe. I mean, Barkley in that series, and they didn't really touch on it all that much, but Barkley was just, he was phenomenal in that series. He was a beast. I don't know what his scoring averages were. I don't have them in front of me, but I just remember him being just fantastic in that series. And it took a superhuman effort by Jordan. I mean, that's the highest point total or highest point per game average of anybody ever in the history of the finals. Jordan averaged 41 a game in that 93 finals. And Barkley, I'm sure, was over 30. He was phenomenal.
And by the way, you know, that was the other thing that stuck out, was they were like, Michael Jordan has 4 threes in the quarter. It's a new finals record. And I'm like, what? Like, now it's like, that would be nothing. That's piddly. Someone hitting 4 threes in a quarter. I think it was 5.5 he had. That's definitely been broken. But I thought it was just interesting because obviously, a lot of times the debate is, well, Jordan didn't really shoot the threes that well. But, you know, I think if he would be playing in today's game, he would be shooting the threes very well. I think he would have made himself a really good shooter.
Absolutely. If that would have been something that would have been needed at that time, he clearly would have developed the ability to shoot threes and would have shot them with a tremendous amount of success. But it just wasn't necessary at that time. And he was so good at what he did, which early in his career, he was so good at getting to the basket. And then later in his career, especially in the second three-peat, he was just so good from the mid-range. And there was no need for him to extend his range out to three and be able to take the volume of threes that guys are shooting today. The game just wasn't played that way. And so he played within the confines of what the game was at the time. And there was nobody that did it any better. And if it would have required him to shoot threes, he would have shot threes.
Yep, for sure.
I don't think I have anything else. I don't know about what you think, Mike. But
well, I like the gambling piece of it. I thought it was interesting just seeing the amount of when Will Perdue was talking about the $1, you know, blackjack or whatever they were playing, and Jordan's always in the back of the plane playing with Harper and Pippen, and I forget who else was in that mix back there. But just the fact that they're gambling like that, and then the scene with the security guards and tossing the coins at the wall was, to me, like that was just a glimpse into the mentality of what Jordan was like. Because here he is just with those guys that he spent a lot of time with, I'm sure. And by that point, they're his friends, or at least his pseudo friends. But the fact that they're talking trash and tossing quarters and throwing $20 down, and it's over a ridiculous throwing coins at a wall. By the way, I've never seen that game before. Have you ever seen that before?
No, I haven't. The only game I know is Bloody Knuckles. That's not, I don't know that one at all.
I had never seen that before. I don't know if that's like bocce ball.
That might be something. That sounds like a quarantine. Does look like a quarantine kind of game though. So maybe I'll take it.
Does.
Over the next episode.
And the kids. You and the kids would be, you know.
Oh, my wife would really. My wife would really appreciate that, Mike.
Start throwing that out. I'd play them for pennies.
Ooh, yeah.
Penny a toss. That could be fun. But just again, it was hilarious when the guy that kind of looked like Stan Albeck, his first coach, who did the shoulder shake, and there was a lot of memes on there of him put on the Wings poster and comparing the. I think Jacob Ammerman actually put up there a comparison of who did it better, Jordan with the shrug after the 6 threes against Portland, or the security guy after the winning the quarter tossing against the wall game. I thought that was pretty funny stuff. I enjoyed seeing that.
Yeah, that was good.
And then I thought the scene of him laying on the bed in his hotel room, just basically again on lockdown, that to me was giving you a really good window into what his life was like a lot of the time. I mean, certainly in that second iteration, the second three-peat, that was, I think, the way he lived a lot of his life. And it's tough, man. That's a tough way to live, where basically you're just, the only time you're free is when you're on the court. And otherwise, you're either surrounded by media or fans, or you're locked inside your hotel room. And you just think about what that's like day to day. And you mentioned earlier in the episode just about the pressure that he felt and the how everything was kind of coming in on him. And as you said, there wasn't any social media. And it would be interesting to see how that would impact what his life was like. But it was just a window into what this guy's day to day was like. Or even when they won that 93 title and he's sitting on the floor, and he's like, can I just have 2 minutes? And then they asked him if he wanted to call his wife, which goes back to what you talked about last week. Are we going to see anything with his family? And it seems like the answer to that is going to be no. I don't think we're going to see much of anything in terms of, you obviously have seen a lot of his mom and dad. They're also going to, I'm sure, get into the murder of his father and how that played into him deciding to walk away as well. Because you kind of, I don't know, we haven't really discussed that all that much, but clearly, when you throw that on top of some of the other things we've talked about in terms of the media pressure and just the strain of having to go through his day-to-day life, you throw on the murder of his father on top of that, and I think that we're going to find out that that's probably one of the things that really pushed him over the top in terms of pushing him out of the game and just trying to get away for a little bit.
Yeah. So one of my friends on Facebook posted tonight, like, he liked the right players. And, you know, back in the day, you know, you send mail. I don't know if you know what that is, mail. You send mail in the mailbox. You
know, I do know what that is. Yes, okay. I'm familiar with that.
Okay, I wanted to make sure. I don't know. But he would send notes to players and stuff. So he sent one to the Bulls. And they would, I guess the Bulls got so much fan mail, they created a stock mail that they would send out. Dear Bulls fan, thank you for your interest in the back-to-back-to-back NBA World Champion Chicago Bulls. And your recent fan letter. We truly appreciate your enthusiasm and support. The Bulls have completed the third month of the regular season and have posted an 8-6 record during February and overall record of this. And then they give you all the stats for the whole month of February. The Bulls would like to thank you for your support and hope you are enjoying the season. Sincerely, 1991, 1992, 1993, three-peat Chicago Bulls. P.S. Due to the overwhelming amount of requests we receive, we can unfortunately not provide autographs.
There you go.
So that makes a lot of sense. He posted that on Twitter, on Facebook, and then he wrote down, "Young Bull down, Bull fans, Blockbuster Video, and the Bulls have a club just for you." That's pretty good. I thought it was interesting.
That's funny. Oh, one other thing that we didn't talk about is the Jerry Krause hatred went to a whole nother level tonight in terms of Kukoc, which you talked about off the top of the show, and just how he had no idea that these guys were coming after him and how much they hated him. And then to Kukoc's credit, he came back and played a good game in the gold medal final. Not that it mattered, but came back and kind of showed his toughness. And then what Jordan did to Marley, he's like, yeah, Krause thinks Marley's really good. Yeah, I wasn't having that. I thought that was hysterical. You better hope if Jerry Krause likes you, you don't ever get in Michael's way.
Yeah, I was like, wait a second, this guy, not only was he kind of being shady to players on the, but he goes and says that Tonio Kukoc is going to be a great player for a team that has won back-to-back championships. Like what is he thinking? Like, it's crazy.
Well, think about that interview that was clearly done in the locker room after, I think it was the 92, it was the second title, where he's like, it's our organization all the way from Jerry Reinsdorf down to, I forget who he mentioned, like the clubhouse attendant, Billy, who's worked here for 20 years. It's our organization. The organization is, you know, we have a great organization and that's what wins. And you're just like, dude, like, get over yourself, man. Like, you can't figure this out while you're winning. It's not a mystery. Let's look at the whole entire history.
If you can't figure it out, all you need to do is look at 94 and 95, right? I mean, that's what you need to do is, they were a great team. They were still a good team. That they went to the playoffs both years, right, Mike?
Yes.
But
the second year, the year Jordan retired. So the next year, they won 55 games. They finished. I think they were second. I think they were second in the East that year.
Behind the Knicks, I'm guessing.
I believe so. I could be wrong, but I think.
I'm gonna look right now.
There you go. But yeah, and then the following year, Jordan came back in the spring, played like the last, you know, he came back with the double nickel in his second game.
Oh, they
game
were third.
The Knicks.
The
third,
Hawks
okay.
were one, the Knicks were two, the Bulls were three.
Okay, there you go.
So was 94.
Okay. But then the next year, Jordan is still out, but then comes back, whatever, in the spring. I forget exactly when.
Yeah, they
when
finished
he came
fifth
back.
That year.
Yeah, and that's when they ended up playing Orlando. And Orlando beat them in the playoffs. That was the early Shaq Penny, when both of them were probably.
Which, by the way, did you see the Penny clips on Twitter today? There were some really good. I meant to send them to you and I forgot. I don't remember who posted them at this point, but there were some really good Penny step back, more Penny step back clips. And I'm
Penny
like,
has
man,
some great Penny man, has some great highlights.
I was looking at that. I'm like, man, how is that even fair? How is that even fair? He was the original James Harden, but he's likable.
Yeah, Penny was incredible. We've talked about it a bunch of times. We forgot about the little kid yelling at Barkley on his way off the floor.
Oh, that was good.
Don't take it personally, Charles.
That was good.
Again, that was just a funny one-off. Obviously, there's not a whole lot to talk about there other than that was a good line by that kid. And be curious to see where that kid is today. Where are you today?
Yeah.
Another one-off thing was a lot of people were putting it on Twitter, the license plate on the red Range Rover when he's driving in with Ahmad. I don't know if you saw that at all.
No.
So his license plate on the Range Rover said "To Trey." So that was pretty fun. That was pretty funny. He had some good conversations actually in there with Ahmad. When they were talking about the Olympics, and you clearly wouldn't remember it, but it was such a huge deal when he had to wear that Reebok warm-up suit, and then he came out with the flag, and he's like, they're going to get a big effing surprise when they thought he was going to be wearing that thing and displaying the Reebok, and instead you know, decided to put the flag over it. But that was a big controversy. Like people were legitimately upset that he wasn't, because there was talk like he wasn't going to wear the warm up and what's he going to do? And because he's such a, you know, such a stumping for Nike, and the flag ended up being a pretty good compromise. I wonder if they didn't really go into whose idea that was. You wonder if that was something that he came up with, or if that was something that somebody else shared.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was funny. Jordan played only 17 games that season after he came back. I didn't realize.
Yeah, he came back late in the spring, and
I'm sure they're gonna. That'd probably be next week's episode. That'll probably be episode eight, I would guess. Right?
Yeah, because I think 7 is going to focus on the decision to walk away. It's going to focus on the death of his father. It's going to talk about the baseball piece of it. And then I got to believe 8 is going to get into that season when he came back. And then they lose in the playoffs to Orlando. And then what the preparation is going into the second three-peat. So they still got to get through those first two championships and talk a little bit more in detail each of those.
In the regular season, okay, they played 17 games. How many games of the 17 games that Jordan played that year did they win, do you think? I'm looking at it right now. He only played 17 games. How many games? Fresh off the boat. Like, literally hasn't played basketball.
I would guess they won 13.
They won 13. That's exactly correct. Including a 55-point effort from Jordan against the Knicks.
That was the second game back, I believe.
That was his fifth game back.
Fifth?
Yeah, he played Indiana, Boston, Orlando, Atlanta, and then New York. Fifth game. I'm looking at the website right now.
All right, you're right. You're probably right. For some reason, I always think of that as being the second game back. So he went Jordan knowledge is limited there.
He averaged 27 points a game after not playing for 2 years. I mean, I'm sure he was playing pickup games and stuff, but it's just crazy.
Again, it's ridiculous. It just points out what I was talking about earlier, that he can be out till 2:30 in the morning. He can be playing 36 holes of golf. He can be smoking cigars and still going out and being the greatest player ever.
It's kind of how you are with your podcast, Mike.
There you go. Late night podcast, the vampire podcasting. It's always good. Yeah. We try to do whatever we can do to make it happen.
Yep. All right. Interesting. We'll see what happens next week. I'm looking forward to just kind of hearing his mindset about the whole thing, because obviously I don't know that he's ever really talked about it other than, I mean, maybe you would have more light on that than I would, but like just the decision to walk away, it'll just be interesting to hear his insight, especially, you know, 25 years later, so to speak.
I think retrospectively, it'll be curious to hear. He clearly, and I think they had Stern on tonight to kind of address the gambling, because there's always obviously been that conspiracy theory that the NBA asked him to step away because of the gambling. And I think tonight kind of put that part of the story to rest when he said, I always bet on myself and I was always betting on things that I was doing, which is, again, what they showed.
He was betting on his team?
I mean, I would guess no, but everything that they showed in the doc was him betting on his ability to toss coins at the wall, him betting on his ability to play cards, him betting on his ability to play golf.
Yeah.
So there was no talk of him betting on games in any other sports, or clearly obviously not in basketball. So I don't know. Could there be more to the story than what comes out? Maybe, but I'm guessing if we're not getting any of that in this, where we're not even getting a hint of it, I don't think that if there is truth to that, I don't think we're ever gonna figure it out. The Slim Bowler part was pretty funny.
Yeah, Slim Bowler. I didn't even know who that was.
That was hilarious. That was a chapter that I kind of forgot, but yeah, that was a big deal when it came out that he had a $57,000 check made out to this guy, and I think you think about that amount of money and it sounds shocking, but then you consider who it is and the amount of money that Jordan was making. And you just saw him in the episode just throwing money around like it was nothing in terms of his gambling and stuff that he was doing, that it doesn't surprise me that he was playing with. It's kind of weird, as he said, that he looks back on some of those things and the people that he was dealing with, and that maybe he had some poor judgment about some of the people that he was hanging out with, but basically he was just hanging out with them and golfing and gambling. It wasn't anything more than that. But retrospectively, kind of regrets maybe the quality of the individuals that he was hanging out with.
Yeah.
And then the last thing that I thought was good, again, was the soundtrack. I thought was awesome. The you can get with this or you can get with that.
Yeah, that was good.
And how they timed it out, I thought that was good.
You could be a rapper, Mike. That's pretty good.
That was pretty good. So I could do some freestyle on the next episode. I don't think anybody wants to hear that.
Overpromise, underdeliver, Mike.
although I will say it's funny that my daughter Madeline, who's in fourth grade, I have gotten her completely into 80s rap. So her favorite 80s rap group, you won't be able to guess it, but anyway, it's Houdini. So she sings Friends.
Harry, is it Harry Houdini?
No, not Harry Houdini. Houdini, man. Big Mouth. Big Mouth is her favorite song. Look it up. Big Mouth by Houdini. It's a good song. All clean stuff. All clean. But the rap
clean
soundtrack.
Clean rap? What is that?
Yeah, the songs that the soundtrack for the doc has been perfect. Brings back a lot of good memories just from a musical standpoint. They had one of my favorite songs that I've been listening to recently when I call up for a song on Amazon Music that was pretty obscure at the time. And actually my one buddy who I was in college with, he always used to laugh at this guy's name, but the rapper's name was Special Ed. And they were playing I Got It Made when that was during the shoe part of the doc. And go back and listen to that song. It's got some really funny lyrics.
Will there be any Space Jam talk next week? It's got to be, right? We got to talk about Space Jam in one way or another. Like they can't.
You would think there probably would be something just in terms of how they had to build the gyms and build the gym for him so he could play while he was on the set. I would think that would at least be touched on at some point, but who knows? And I don't know how instrumental
awesome
it is to
is
telling
they,
the story.
If they drop the first Space Jam 2 trailer next week during the episode when they have to talk about Space Jam, I think that would be really good, smart marketing. Throwing it out there, LeBron and Spring Hill Entertainment.
All right, there you go. It could be.
He did. I don't know if you saw. They did reveal the logo for the new Space Jam movie. I don't know if you saw it.
I did not see it.
Space Jam: A New Legacy or something like that. So it's called.
There you go. Well, I don't know. To be honest, I'm going to be totally honest here. I don't know if I ever saw the first one.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. If you go back and watch it, Mike,
it's not
pretty
good.
It's pretty atrocious. Atrocious. And people that are listening to this are going to be offended that I said that. But it's kind of like I feel bad saying this, but the acting was so bad, like in across the board. It's like if you go back, I guess this totally wouldn't hit with you, but it would hit with my age people. If we go back, like my kids have been kind of watching Power Rangers, Mike. I don't know if you ever watched Power Rangers, but my God, is the acting terrible. It's so bad. It's so cringe. It's terrible. But it's just the acting in Space Jam was pretty bad. I feel bad saying that. So,
well, I don't walk away from that feeling offended. So,
I'm just saying, I think people in my age group, they have an affinity for Space Jam.
All right. Well, there you go.
I think when I think of Space Jam, I think of three things. I think of Michael Jordan, obviously. I think of the Looney Tunes, and I think of an awesome soundtrack. I really think the soundtrack to Space Jam was really, really good.
I was gonna say that now you start thinking of Jerry Krause.
Well, that's true. He's the guy. So,
all right. What was your favorite thing from this episode? Just give me one thing. What's your favorite one thing from this one, and then we'll wrap it up.
I think my favorite thing was just seeing them all playing at the 92 Olympics, like the scrimmage, and then just kind of, I like them talking. I thought for sure they were going to talk more about the Dream Team stuff, but I felt like they didn't talk as much, but I enjoyed that the most out of the whole episode, I think.
Yeah, my favorite scene was the Magic Larry Bird talking junk session. That was by far seeing those three guys in the same space, just kind of talking at each other, I thought was just classic. It's footage that I had never seen before. And it really kind of cut to the heart of who those guys are as competitors. And so that was by far my favorite part. Again, can't wait for next week for the next two episodes. I said it last week. I said it after the second week. And I said it after the first week. When this thing ends, I'm going to be crushed that there isn't any more, because it's just been phenomenal. That 2 hours continues to go by in the snap of a finger. And it's been great so far, and can't wait to see it continue.
For sure. I'm really looking forward to seeing where it goes. And I mean, obviously we know the end of the story, but just I'm enjoying the journey to get there.
No question. All right, Jay, thanks for staying up late. And to everyone out there, we really appreciate you listening and tuning in on these Last Dance episodes. We'll catch you next week. We'll get some interviews in this week. We got 3 of them coming out. So thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Coaches, we've teamed up with Coach Tyler Whitcomb so you can now purchase his exclusive new playbooks right from the Hoopheads Pod website. If you're looking for ways to improve your team next season, these playbooks blend affordability with the quality content that serious coaches are looking for. Just visit hoopheadspod.com/store and you'll find playbooks from John Calipari of Kentucky, Leonard Hamilton from Florida State, and Mike Young of Virginia Tech. Check out these great resources at hoopheadspod.com/store.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.